Okay, so this week we read a section from Sacred Dimensions. We read the preface and we read the first chapter of Sacred Dimensions. They're very different, and I think the first chapter gives us a chance to really look at some important issues in understanding how TSK works, how we should be approaching the text. But I'm not going to go to that right away. Instead, I'm going to look at the preface. We're both basically going to focus on the reading from Sacred Dimensions, starting with the preface. And we'll do some practice toward the middle of the phone call. That's my plan. And just as a reminder, so Kathleen is not here, so if problems come up, I'm not going to be able to deal with them. Let's hope no problems come up. I just see a message here saying that Hayward is having trouble connecting, and I don't know why, and unfortunately I'm not going to be able to deal with that, but I hope it works out. The other thing I wanted to mention that you all know, but just as a reminder, even though some of you are muted, you can certainly make comments, ask questions, and so on in the chat box if you're online. If you're on the phone, I can't mute you anyway, I don't think. So you can just speak up. I see Eliana's on the phone, and we have, I saw at least one other person on the, well, most everybody's actually on the computer. Okay, we've got somebody, well, okay, for a moment we had an echo. Sorry for the technical things. I think now we're ready to go. Okay, so the main point in the preface is a discussion, an interesting discussion about knowledge. And the very starting point, really, is the very first sentence of the preface, where Rinpoche says, acquiring knowledge is like breathing. We are born knowing how to do it. We are knowing beings. We are just as we're breathing beings, right? So physically, the kind of fundamental is the heart beats, the air, the lungs breathe. That's what it means to be a living, sentient being. In terms of this other dimension, which we could call the mental, but it doesn't matter too much for our purposes whether that's helpful or not. The other dimension is this knowing dimension. Sometimes people like to speak of awareness. We have an intrinsic awareness. Another way in modern consciousness studies, they like to say that there's something it's like to be me. There's nothing it's like to be a stone, but there's something it's like to be a me, or to be me, actually. In pointing to that, they're really making the same point here. It's fundamental to our nature that we know. We're born knowing how to know. And I just read something recently, and I'm sure you all know this, that even the embryo in the uterus knows. And I read this little study they'd done where embryos in the womb can actually recognize words, not the meaning of words. I don't want to go too far, but you know, if you say a word repeatedly to a baby in the womb, when it's born, you can do little tests to show that it recognizes that word compared to other words. So knowing starts very early on. That's really our starting point. Now, where I want to take that is to look at a question that comes up a lot in terms of TSK, and this is partly something that's important for people who are training for the teaching in the teaching program, but I think it's also interesting for everybody. We have time, space, and knowledge in this vision, and everybody is inherently, it seems, everybody wants to know about time. Everybody understands that time is an important force. Everybody feels this sense of being pressured by time. Everybody would like to know how to understand or view or see time differently. With space, it's a little bit more, it's a little harder for people to engage with that. And that's, I think, because we really just are used to space as being nothing at all. So, and therefore uninteresting, totally boring. So you have to do a little work to get people to understand the significance of space. You can talk about space as being crowded. We have lots of expressions in English about my personal space and things like that. But still, you have to do a little work. But with knowledge, people have a hard time with knowledge. People don't like the word knowledge in a lot of cases. And Rinpoche discusses this, and I want to spend a few minutes going into it. But let me just give you an example. Most of you are probably familiar, at least by reputation, with Krishnamurti, who was a very important teacher in the 20th century, and whose teachings in a lot of ways are sympathetic with TSK, or resonate with TSK is maybe a better way to say it. Krishnamurti and David Bohm, who was his student but also wrote some other interesting things, they think of knowledge as a bad guy. Knowledge is when we kind of give up our inherent awareness and turn it into just an assembly of facts. And we think that that's the only thing that is possible for us. And that is an impression, or that is a way of thinking about knowledge that is not, you know, you don't have to be a follower of Krishnamurti. A lot of people say, oh, knowledge, that's just the stuff you collect and put in books. And it doesn't have any relevance to me in terms of my own experience. I mean, of course, I like to be able to look things up, you know. But now, since we can look everything up on the web, you know, we know where to go to find the knowledge we need. That's the sense of knowledge. It's something that's outside of us. But of course, in TSK, knowledge is very different. And I think the fact that Rinpoche uses the word knowledge is a kind of a deliberate challenge. You know, sometimes in the TSK books, or a lot of times, we talk about knowing, and people already feel a lot happier when you talk about knowing, because now it's something that I'm doing, and it seems like it's relevant. So knowledge may be the outcome of knowing, but knowing is my activity, and so I'd like to learn more about another word that Rinpoche uses that is not a real English word is knowingness. And that's kind of a substitute for knowledge, and it brings in this added dimension of it being an activity. And that's useful and good. But for the most part, Rinpoche stays with the word knowledge. And I think it's because he wants to show, or he wants to hold open the possibility that we could understand knowledge differently, in the same way that we could understand time differently, space differently. So we want to go into that difference. We want to look into it. So Caroline mentions or comments on that. She says, I think it's helpful to differentiate between knowing and knowing about. And then also, how do we distinguish knowledge from wisdom? Yeah, that's exactly the range of questions we'd like to look into. In English, we can say, there's many things we can say. We can talk about knowing about something, and that seems, well, I won't try to comment on it. We can talk about knowing that something is true, and that's our most usual way of talking about knowledge. Or we can talk about knowing how to do something, and that's a very different way of talking. Know how as compared to knowing that. So there's some possibilities that point beyond the most limited sense of knowing. And then this question about the difference between knowledge and wisdom is really important too. In German, I don't see, I'm not sure if anybody's online from Germany this morning. Let's see. I don't see anybody here yet, but we do have some people, of course, in the program from Germany. So in Germany, when it came time to translate time, space, and knowledge, they had a real problem, at least the original translator did, because there are two words for knowledge in German, Wissen, which is related to our word wisdom, and Erkenntnis. And that has to, more to do with knowing that, knowing about, kind of in that range. And in the first TSK book, they wound up using both words at different times, and that didn't make anybody happy. So I think when they translated Dynamics of Time and Space, I believe they went to the word listen, but I'm not sure about that. For us in English, the difference between knowledge and wisdom is very important. Again, I think Rinpoche stays with the word knowledge because he doesn't want to turn it into something that's off in the distance. He doesn't want to make it some goal that we want to attain at a later point. You know, later on we'll get wise, and then that will make a big difference. Now, what he's trying to show is that our ordinary knowledge already embodies a deeper vision of what knowledge can be, and that we can find within our ordinary ways of knowing a different understanding, or we can activate knowledge within ordinary knowledge. I think that's why he stays with the word, but it's good to keep in mind that all these different possibilities are being discussed. So I want to look for a moment at what Rinpoche says about the problem with the knowledge that we have now and how you might address that problem and the way that TSK addresses it. What he says is, I think it's on page 14, let's see. He's in the middle of page 14, he says, he talks about how information is accumulating. That kind of knowledge is there all the time. But there's a growing sense, he says, that knowledge has become pointless, or that certain fundamental kinds of knowledge have been lost. And then he points to part of the reason, I think, that this is so. He says, without a sheltering framework of meaning and significance, knowledge becomes dead facts, data to be filed away and retrieved when it seems useful. So that's the distinction that he's pointing towards, I think it has a lot to do with the reason why knowledge seems like it's irrelevant or maybe even destructive. When we rely on knowledge, we're making a mistake. Why? Because we're just dealing with dead facts, right? We're just dealing with information. That's knowledge. And that something there has really been lost. So what seems to be missing is this idea of a sheltering framework of meaning and significance. Knowledge by itself, in that view, is not meaningful or significant. And the question is, how could we return to a sense of knowledge as being meaningful or significant? So Michael makes a comment on that. He says, that's so interesting. Good. What you are saying about the lack of intimacy and personal connection with the word knowledge. How can we put the now back in knowledge and remove the ledge from knowledge? So that's nice. I think it's good to play with the meaning of the word. I have looked up the ledge part before, but not lately. If you have access to a dictionary, you know, an unabridged dictionary or an etymological dictionary, you might look that up and see what you can find out. One thing to say about the word knowledge, of course, is that it's related to some words that in the Buddhist tradition, but in every tradition, really, point towards a deeper knowledge. K-N-O, the kno, is like the word, so in our mystical traditions or our certain esoteric forms of Christianity, the word gnosis, G-N-O. And in Sanskrit, that word is spelled J-N-A, but it's basically the same thing. So we get jnana, which is not knowledge, but has to do more with a kind of a penetrating insight or primordial wisdom. And we don't have a good way to translate it because we have this problem with our word knowledge and the word wisdom. We don't quite know how to put them together. So there's a lot to look at here, a lot to understand. I think it's very helpful in terms of understanding what the TSK vision is about and how it proceeds. Ron is Ed's point here that the word jhana is about absorption, that is about a certain meditative state. But actually, Ron, that's a different word. That's the word dhyana in Sanskrit, or jhana in Pali, which does have to do with meditation. But this is the word jnana. But let's not go there. That's not really what we're talking about. Let's not go any further with that. So if we take that point that we have lost the idea of a sheltering framework, I have a little trouble with that phrase when I think about it, because frameworks don't really shelter. But you could think about a sheltering umbrella, or that's not quite a nice enough image either. So, but the idea is that knowledge is related to senses of meaning and significance that give our lives a sense of being meaningful. And that kind of knowledge, it seems to be exactly what we've lost. So what do you do if you've lost that? One obvious answer would be you try to recreate a sense of meaning and significance. Or you try to rediscover or reconnect with a sense of significance. Ron says that's like refuge. There's a kind of an underlying knowing that we would like to have, that is somehow more related, that means something to us, that has to do with our sense that our lives have value and purpose. Ron says a kind of naturalized refuge. Yeah, you could maybe say that. And taking refuge, sometimes people have written about people who have a little bit of a Buddhist background have said things about taking refuge in time and space and knowledge. Because that's such a Buddhist term, I don't really like to do that, but it's a possibility. It's one possibility. It's one way of thinking about it. So you could try to find your way back to a kind of knowledge that is more of this sheltering framework that has more to do with meaning and significance. And that's a very legitimate move. Those of you who read Chapter 5 in Love of Knowledge, there's some beautiful material in there about not about making the move back, although there's places in Love of Knowledge that talk about that, but about how we get trapped in this sense that we live in, that our knowledge is essentially meaningless. And it really has a lot to do with creating this split between the subject and the object, because when you do that, especially in a kind of scientific view, where you say, you know, we have to be objective and material, the material reality is the only ultimate reality, what you do is you take the sense of meaning and value and you make it inward. It becomes something that is available only as subjective experience. And that means that you're lost. You know? Michael has a comment here where he says, knowledge is a returning home. I'm going to lose somebody who's giving us a little feedback. Returning home, a knowledge that lets us return home to time and space. I think that's very good. That is really a lot of what the TSK vision is about. It's a kind of a returning, I guess you could say returning home. You might find other ways too. And Caroline mentions that Chapter 5 is related to a post that Michael put up on the website please, I encourage you to look at the website, about the difficulty of communicating the vision to family and friends. Yeah, I think there's a line in chapter 5, and I know not all of you have read it, so I don't want to dwell on it, but it's about this point. There's a line in chapter 5 which says, when this process happens, when you put all of the sense of meaning and significance in the interior of the self, then, and this is the quote, it says, what is meaningless comes to the fore by default. What we can talk about, what's available for public discussion, is meaningless, because we think that that's what's really real, and that the other part is all subjective. That is from the point of view of TSK, that's a misunderstanding. I want to say one thing before, related to that point, and that is that it's easy to turn scientists into the bad guys. You see, we're always trying to turn people into the bad guys. Knowledge is the bad guy, or science is the bad guy, or materialism is the bad guy. Scientists as such, and people have pointed this out to me, I think it's a really important point, is scientists as such actually, because they're so involved with the material world, often find a sense of wonder and beauty and meaning in the material world. So it's really not accurate or fair to say that they don't have a sense of the meaningful. But I think it is accurate to say that science, when they go into the lab and they put on their lab coat and they're being scientists, then they say, no, questions of meaning don't have any role to play here. In their own lives, their own sense of their connection to nature, that may be very different. But we're dealing with a kind of an underlying problem which relates knowledge to this issue of not being meaningful, not having anything to do with our lives. So Ron says it's a disenchantment with space and time. The subject is cut off from the world. And then he asks the question, I'm paraphrasing, isn't that too much like romantic transcendentalist return to nature? Well, it may be. In other words, we can't just say, oh, now I know what to do. I need to find, I need to connect with time and space. I need to connect with the world in a way that restores meaning. Yes, that's helpful. But that's not, in the end, or even in the beginning, what TSK is about. And in fact, that's exactly where I want to go. You could try to find ways to restore this sheltering framework, restore this sense of a heartfelt, meaningful connection to the world. And that's an approach that some people take. And other people take an approach toward a kind of fundamentalist religion, for instance, where you say, I don't want to ask questions about the way things are. I want to accept a certain version of reality, a certain understanding, because that version makes the world meaningful. It restores that sense of a sheltering framework that gives meaning. Those are possible approaches to the situation that we find ourselves in. But TSK is different. TSK is not interested in establishing that sheltering framework, or to use Ron's phrase here, a romantic transcendentalism. What TSK is about is openness, is a particular kind of knowing that becomes available to us in the particular circumstance that we find ourselves in now in the world. The circumstance that we find ourselves in is one in which these orders have broken down. And when they break down, what happens is that new possibilities open up. If we focus on the breakdown, then we find ourselves alienated, or we find ourselves not knowing how to integrate knowledge with our sense of being alive in the world and in space and time. But if we focus on openness, and on the, what becomes possible when there isn't a framework, when you've broken out of the framework. Now we're in TSK territory, you could say. So there's a post or something that Rinpoche has written. I can't remember right now where it is, but it's not in any of the books. But it's in another publication, which is not one of the TSK books, but Rinpoche talks in it briefly about TSK. I think it's Milking the Painted, no, maybe Mastery of Mind Over Matter. I'm not sure. But he says in that, TSK is a teaching for the open spaces. And the image he's using there is that when you create this sheltering framework, it's like withdrawing in a particular into a particular space. Like, you know, you walk inside your house, you close the door, you're safe. You know, but TSK, he says, is a teaching for the open spaces. And here, too, in this reading, he talks about openness. It's really right after he talks about the loss of a sheltering framework. In the very next paragraph, he says, well, we can't turn back. But as borders break down, a new openness emerges. Could this openness sustain us? Could it offer a very different kind of support? And that really is what the knowledge of TSK is aiming toward, and what the whole vision, it seems to me, is aiming toward. So there's this little phrase that caught my attention this time that I haven't really remembered, kind of playful, at the top of page Roman numeral 15. He says, let's go back to the bottom. He says, of 14, the collapse of old structures has a liberating effect. That's if you approach it with this sense of openness, right? No longer bound to specifics, knowledge is free to operate at a different level, to bring out the benefits of being alive in space and time. Amidst our confusion and uncertainty, we can sense this possibility. And then he writes, knowledge is in the mood to move, which is charming, I think. It's as though knowledge itself says, well, let's see what's going on here. Let's see what we can make happen in this situation in which we find ourselves. So, you know, Rinpoche talks about TSK being a teaching for the open spaces. He also, one of the subtitles in one of the TSK books says, The Liberation of the Modern Mind. In another subtitle is Transcending the Limits on Knowledge. This is a very fundamental notion in TSK. It has to do with our culture. You know, we find ourselves at a certain point in history. And in this point, new possibilities open up. It also, though, has to do with us as individuals. And we do already always need to come back to what this means to us as individuals. You know, so the possibility of developing a different way of knowing and then a different way of being in time and space, that's a possibility for us as individuals. It's not just saying, oh, you know, we live in a time when such and such is possible. If you lose the individual moment in TSK or the individual dimension, then, you know, that's a mistake. Even though Rinpoche talks about a no-ownership knowledge, we talked about that last time, that doesn't mean that it's not something relevant to us. And I'm just, there's a couple of comments I see, and I will go turn to those. But just to stay with the text for a moment, at the bottom of page 17, Roman numeral 17, Rinpoche says, space, time, and knowledge are universal, and at the same time, they are intensely my own. And he basically says then it's up to us to develop that knowledge. And that's another dimension of the openness and freedom. We in our situation, our time, our space, which is also a universal time and universal space, we have this possibility for a new vision of what's real and therefore a new vision of what's possible. So Sudhi comments, I think, probably on that sentence, knowledge is in the move to is in the mood to move, that it's very playful. It is. It's so playful. Yes, it is. It's very. It's fun. It's kind of good to remember that TSK should be playful and fun, or can be playful and fun. Ron is connecting this to the postmodern turn, the loss of grand narratives, which is another way of talking about sheltering frameworks. That's right. And he says TSK is a way of playing in the space of breakdown that counters alienation. Right. That's exactly the place, what Rinpoche is talking about. We find ourselves in this strange in-between place where nothing really makes sense. And it actually, you know, I don't usually think about this so much in terms of TSK, but as we've been exploring this, it strikes me that we can't assume, in fact, it's not reasonable to assume, that this situation is going to stay the way it is. Give up completely. You know, we're in this place of breakdown, and we might just move toward greater and greater chaos and alienation. And that typically in the history of human cultures leads in the end to tyranny, because somebody steps in to recreate or restore meaning. That's one possibility. And the other possibility, even if it's, you know, if we don't think in terms of tyranny, is that somebody or some many different groups of people may really try to move back toward that sense of a sheltering framework, a sense of that's not postmodern, you know, and in fact not modern, may try to establish something in which we lose that sense of freedom. So right now we are in a position where we have a sense of freedom. It seems really important to stay with it. Michael asks a question. He says, what are the means by which individual space can connect with universal space such that we as individuals can contribute understanding and energy to the greater wholes we inhabit and share with others? Well, that's a big question. I think it's a question to consider as we move through this course. We're exploring space and time, and one of the things about the chapter in Sacred Dimensions that we're going to look at in a bit, one of the things about that chapter is that it starts from the self. It makes the point that we really always have to start from the self. So space and time and knowledge in the beginning are going to be personal, individual, uniquely my own, in the quote that we just looked at. But that doesn't mean they have to belong to a self. And finding the way to explore our own immediate personal experience in a way that doesn't then turn us into the world of the self, the subjective world of the self, which is what Rinpoche is talking about in Chapter 5 of Love of Knowledge, that's really what the vision is about. And that's why I say that we have to get clear on this sense of being at once universal and unique. Ron asks, well, have we ever really been disconnected? You might say no. I mean, there's a good reason. There are good reasons for saying no. But people sure feel disconnected, and it's a part of. It's a part of this sense of alienation, that if we're cut off from some sheltering framework or from a central truth that gives us meaning, then we feel cut off from everybody else as well. I'm not saying that's the case, and I don't even think we have to argue we really have to decide whether it's true or false that we're cut off from other people. We just need to look at our own experience. And if there's anything in our own experience, if there are moments in our own experience in which we do feel cut off, in which we feel that there isn't a sense of meaning, or in which we feel that we're cut off from the energy of time or the openness of space, any time something like that comes up, that's a sign that we could make a shift, that we could be aiming toward this different vision. It's a place, and Ron says here, Rinpoche says, we ignore space and time. That's right. We ignore space and time because we've set them up in such a way that they don't mean anything. They're meaningless, you know. This sense that knowledge is meaningless, that it's just a collection of facts, is not separate from the way that we approach time and space. We think of time as just being the measurement of one moment after another, and we think of space as just being this empty container that lets things show up but doesn't have any other role to play in our lives. All of that is a very dispiriting way of being in which any sense of nourishment is lacking. So that's what we're looking for, looking at. Sudhi says that this is like our practice of touching deep, tranquil space, the links with all appearance. That's really right. You know, one of the things I think when it's just an example. Right now, you know, we haven't really started in a systematic way, you could say, to discuss time or space. We are now getting kind of first take on what knowledge, you know, what's possible in knowledge. But we already had an example last week when we did the practice with touching deep, tranquil space, which came from the reading for this week. When that happens, you know, the very idea of touching space is already a pointer toward the possibility that space could be different, that it could be something different from just nothing at all. We don't have to ignore space and time. We don't have to dismiss space and time. We don't have to dismiss knowledge. All of these ways of approaching matters are characteristic of our ordinary knowledge, of the way that we've learned to think or experience. Because, you know, the reality is that there's still a framework. Maybe we call it a model in a different context. There's, you know, Rinpoche talks here about a sheltering framework, a meaning-giving framework. But we're caught up in a framework that doesn't function to give meaning, but it's still a framework. And so we want to be able to move not just into a new framework, TSK says, to be able to understand how frameworks operate, to be able to operate in the openness that's available when our frameworks have broken down. So I think what I want to do, I was actually thinking this was likely to happen. There's a lot to talk about there. We're not going to do a practice today, because I want to instead turn at the chapter for Sacred Dynamics, because I think there's something very important to be learned in working with that chapter. And that is, let's look at the chapter. So the chapter is the first chapter in Sacred Dynamics. It's actually not even called the first chapter. It's the introduction. What's important about this chapter, it seems to me, is to take it as an example of how it is that TSK operates when it starts to present, different descriptions of how you could see things. You can question our ordinary knowledge, you can point to the limitations, you can characterize the way that we ignore space and time, let's say, or the ways that we understand space and time. But it's a different step then to say, well, how could we do it differently? And when we're talking about the writing, I mean, we can do exercises definitely. And I apologize that we won't have time to do an exercise in this phone call. But when you talk about the writing, you say, well, how can you present something without turning it into another model? And in this introductory chapter, Rinpoche gives us, I think, a wonderful example of that. And he's very clear in describing what it is that he's doing. So that's why it's useful to look at this chapter. The model that he uses here is in some ways kind of a funny model. You know, there's this idea, well, you start with the I, or you start with the truth, the fundamental truth, I am here. And that's very consistent with the idea that, you know, the self is at the center of all of our experience. So you start with that model, but then you immediately turn it into a kind of a geometry, or an architecture. So we turn the I into the point at the center, right? And then we say, well, in order for there to be one point, to be able to even specify one point, there have to be two points on the line that connects them. But in order for there to be points at all, then there have to be lines that intersect the line that connects them. And then very quickly you wind up with 16 points, right? And at a certain point he talks about how the line with the two points between and the axis looks like the letter I turned on its side. And the question is, what are you supposed to make of all that? Are you really, you know, is this a new theory about the way reality works, or a new explanation, or a new model? Those are the kinds of things we're usually looking for. And the answer is that it's not. And I think if people don't understand that answer, you know, if somebody starts to read Sacred Dimensions, And they say, well, wait a minute, the I turned on its side, you know, the letter I is supposed to be a model for how subject and object interact with each other. That just seems a little far-fetched. Or when you talk about the 16, you know, you say, well, you've got all these, each point has to have four points that identify it or that kind of locate it. And then each of those four points has to have four more points. Now you're at 16. And he says, so, you know, let's talk about 16 as completion, but the very natural response is to say, well, but why? Why not just keep going? Why not go on to infinity? What's so important about 16? If you took that as an attempt to describe the way things are, I think you'd miss the point of what Rinpoche is doing. And so I want to clarify that point in the minutes we have left. First of all, the reason that Rinpoche is introducing this is because he's saying, okay, you can start from the I am here, and if you do, that gives you ordinary knowledge. But, you know, without departing from that starting point, can we do things differently? And so he says, you know, we have to get curious about the significance of the statement, I am here. And that sense of curiosity, or a kind of a playful exploration, I think is what's going on here. He says, if we go farther, can we open, and this is still in the first paragraph on page 3, can we open into a deeper, more penetrating knowledge? That's what he's trying to do. But he's not doing it by giving us a different framework or a different theory or model. He's just trying to open up a possibility. If you saw the self differently, if you saw it in these kind of geometric terms, and you'd have to kind of let go of the usual sense of self, you start talking about the zero point, and that opens up a new possibility. And then, so what he says on page 5 is very important here. In the third paragraph on page 5, he says, we have no basis for calling this zero-point structure that he's laid out. We have no basis for calling this structure true. but we also have no reason to call it false. In any case, such conclusions seem secondary. What matters is that such a structure allows for a very far-reaching inquiry, not bound to the usual assumptions. And then he says, and it's a useful starting point for inquiry because it starts from the I. So it's my inquiry, right? It's the I's inquiry. Your I, my I, everybody's I. So Ron asks, he says, we cannot deny the place we're starting from, but to see how we start from that place. I don't know about cannot deny, but I think Rinpoche is saying, let's not deny. Let's not deny the place we're starting from. Let's start from the I am here. But let's start differently, or taking that as our starting point, let's move on in a very different way. And that's what is going on in this opening chapter. So it's not as though this is something like, oh gosh, I have to start thinking about it this way. But you say, well, what if I do think about it this way? Where does that leave me? So there's a point on page 7, first paragraph. He says, I am here is the lens that we use to look out on the world. Suppose our lens is defective, right? Suppose that we're operating with a kind of knowledge that limits what we can see or distorts, is actually what he says, distorts what we can see. And we don't even realize it. Well, an inquiry like this is meant to raise that possibility, unfolding in a very different way. And it's a way in which we don't rely on subject and object, and we've already talked about that, about why that structure is going to limit us in a very fundamental way. There's a kind of a challenge here. The point is that we want to liberate knowledge from our usual understandings, and so we want to discover a different way of being in the world. It's bound, so we're starting with geometry. Rinpoche makes very clear in the chapter that we don't just stay on some sort of abstract level. This is going to be an exploration with our body and our senses and our whole being. That's what we want to do. We start off by saying, okay, let's start with the self, but we're not going to do it the way the self would do it. So Michael has a question, and then we'll end for today. He says, has anyone ever tried to explore this blossoming of 0 into 16 in terms of lived experience? Something like an open readiness to experience, inquire, founding itself in 4 perceived elements of experience, then moving on to people, landscape, etc. Well, your first question, sure, people, I think, have tried to work with this. Your second, or your suggestion for how you might do it, I've never heard anybody approach it in that way. It sounds like it might be very interesting. You start with the 4 perceived elements of experience, moving on to people, landscapes, etc. What immediately comes to my mind, and it's not something that's in any of the TSK materials, are the 4 elements, the 4 traditional elements. Of earth, air, fire, and water. So that might be an interesting way to explore it, but I don't know. I'm just throwing that out as a possibility. Ron points to the 16 as 16 aspects of mindfulness. Anybody who'd like to, you can look at various kind of, not so much books on numerology, they don't seem to be very helpful, but sometimes people talk about the significance in different cultures of different numbers, and 16 is, of course, one of those. But that would be more if we were really going to be staying with the model that's laid out in Sacred Dimensions. That's not what we're going to do, not right now. We'll return at different times throughout the course to Sacred Dimensions. But here, the point, the reason for looking at this example, it seems to me, is to understand that it's presented in a kind of a playful way, and a particular way of activating knowledge, where you say, you know, I don't care so much about true and false. What I care about is the inquiry and what kind of knowledge gets awakened in the inquiry. So let's stop there, and maybe we can explore this a little more in the orientation. We'll move on to something quite different, I think, next week. Okay, thank you very much.